From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. A new study published by the Journal of the American Medical Association of Pediatrics on Monday found that infant mortality rates are on the rise in the United States after Roe v. Wade was overturned and states started implementing strict abortion bans. Joining us today to talk more about this is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as the co-author of the book Preparing for the Next Global Outbreak. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
And folks, remember, if you have a public health question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. So Dr. Pate, the study analyzed the infant mortality rate before and 18 months after the constitutional right to an abortion was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. And what the study found is that the infant mortality rate increased by 7% in all infants born in the United States during that time, and 10% in infants born with congenital anomalies. So I want to break this finding down piece by piece if we can. So can we first start with what congenital anomalies are?
Right. So congenital anomalies are problems that occur during the pregnancy while the fetus is in the womb, during the phases where it is developing its body parts. And so when there is a problem with that, then an anomaly can develop. The heart may not form normally. The skull may not form normally. Limbs may not form normally. There are quite a few different things that can go wrong. And that's what this is a general term for all of those.
And that would also include certain chromosomal abnormalities, correct? That would be that would not be conducive to life,
right? Because those chromosomal abnormalities generally do manifest in the baby having anomalies. So yes, it's kind of all together: birth defects, these anomalies, and the genetic disturbances. And that oftentimes these sadly are not compatible with a healthy baby.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, Dr. Pate, when you saw the results of this study, how significant is this increase?
Well, it's a significant increase. It's not horribly surprising because what happened before the law was changed in so many states is that women usually had these severe anomalies identified at their anatomy ultrasound, usually in their second trimester, with our ability now through genetic testing, through ultrasound, through other means to identify these conditions has certainly increased from the time when I was in practice. And so we can identify these and we know the consequences of these. And we present mothers with these, with an explanation of what's wrong, what the implications are. And of course, a mother can decide to carry the infant to term, but oftentimes when the anomaly is very severe and we know that that child, they're not going to be compatible with life, then mothers in the past often opted for a termination so they don't have to carry that baby, knowing that it doesn't have a chance of survival. So now with the restrictions in place, they have to carry them. So now these infant deaths are caught up in these numbers, whereas before they weren't, because before they weren't live births.
So one of the authors of the study wrote, and this is a direct quote, and they write, "There is a broader human toll to consider, including mental health consequences of being denied abortion care or being forced to carry a fetus with a fatal genetic abnormality to term," unquote. I'm curious about what your thoughts are on something like that, Dr. Pate. And I will say this. I've had two children. I cannot fathom something going into that anatomy scan, both of mine happened at 20 weeks, and A, finding out that something is wrong, you are already anxious, you're already nervous, you know what they're looking for when you go into that scan. And then to be presented with the fact that your fetus may have an abnormality that's not compatible with life, and then being told that you now don't have a choice in that matter, I am greatly concerned about the mental health of women, but even their partners who have no choice anymore.
Oh, yes. And this is really what the distressing part of it is. I think when legislators talk about abortions, they are tending to focus on and try to focus the attention of the public on people that electively decide to have an abortion. They just, they don't want the baby, or those kinds of things. That is a entirely different situation than what you and I are talking about. These are devastating situations. These are where the mother, the father, the family are very, very excited about the baby. The baby is very much wanted, but they go in and they get this devastating news about the abnormality with the baby. It is not what they want. This is not in the least the situation of with an unwanted pregnancy. These are children that these mothers desperately want. And now they, having expected this healthy baby, they are devastated with this terrible news. And even when they before proceeded to termination, it took a mental toll on these mothers and some of the family members sometimes. But now to find out at 18, 20 weeks and now have to carry a baby that you know cannot survive for the rest of its termination, rest of the pregnancy, when the mother doesn't wish that, it is an unusually cruel thing to do to a woman, and it takes a horrible toll on them. And I've certainly talked to or heard other mothers that have experienced this and the depression they face, only to have the baby delivered, now have that baby die in their arms because they can't survive outside of the womb. It is a terrible, terrible, cruel thing to do. And this is the disturbing part of it. I think the women should have a choice if they want to carry. I'm generally a pro-life person, but I think it is the woman's choice. And to force them to carry a child like this, to what end? There is no purpose. That baby's condition is not going to improve. That baby is not going to survive. Why torture the woman unless this is her desire?
With that said, we do have other public health issues we need to talk about today. And one is that the CDC is also, Dr. Pate, reporting a rise in walking pneumonia, but in particular in young children. Just tell us what walking pneumonia is.
So walking pneumonia isn't a medical term, but people often use this term to describe a pneumonia that is not making the person so severely ill that they can't go about their activities, that they require oxygen, they require hospitalization, those kind of things. Typically, when people are talking about walking pneumonia, is they've got some cough, some other symptoms, but they're not severely ill, and so they're up walking. And in this case, while there's a number of different organisms that can cause so-called walking pneumonia, in this case, what we're talking about is a bacteria called Mycoplasma pneumoniae. And you're quite right. We've seen a very large increase in the number of cases. But what is particularly of note is that historically, We have seen these cases in school-age children, predominantly elementary, middle, and high school. And we typically don't see them in those children that are of preschool age. But what the biggest increase that we've seen is in children 2 to 4. And that is also making this even a little bit more unusual.
Also, Dr. Pate, the CDC came out with a new recommendation in regards to this year's, the 2024-25 COVID vaccine. And that is they're recommending a second dose for folks who are over age 65. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. And this is not a big change. There are some subtle changes in their recommendation, but the CDC has indicated that people over the age 65 or those that are moderately or severely immunocompromised could get another vaccine, a second dose, in between the annual vaccine rollout. This time, what they did is they said they gave a little bit more specific advice to get it at 6 months, which just puts it squarely in the middle between the annual releases. But this is a good measure. Those of us that are at 65 and older are at increased risk. And of course, those that are immunocompromised, in fact, the CDC has said those persons can actually get even more doses. That's at the discretion of their physician.
And Dr. Pate, we only have about less than a minute left. Let's talk flu shots. Where are we in regards to needing to get that here in Idaho?
Not yet, but stay tuned. We still have very low activity, but I'm watching it like a hawk.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.